You know, today I think it's an appropriate day to talk about storms. Well, we've had storms, haven't we? In our springtime, hey, we're out of spring at this point. We're still having storms. My goodness, I think that the rainfall this year probably has surpassed the normal average rainfall that we've had. Maybe not quite, but pretty close. We've got storms upon storms that have been going and raging, and some storms that make you a little bit nervous as they come through. Of course, most Oklahomans, if you're like me, most Oklahomans, what do? We go out on the front porch and we watch it. Am I right? And I know that most people in other states are scared to death. And we're like, let's just hit the tornado and just watch it. It's kind of neat to see. You know, we're kind of silly when it comes to that. But we are like that at times. I can remember tornado season. I can remember storms all throughout my life. Growing up in Oklahoma City, there are storms all the time. As a matter of fact, one of those storms knocked out the power in the house. It was cool outside. And so what did we do? It was the middle of the night. We started a fire and we slept in the living room in front of the fireplace. Just kind of hanging out as a family with me, my mom, my dad, my brother. It was a great time. It was a lot of fun to be able to experience that storm just as a kid, seeing what was going on. And I can remember one time as well, I think it was about high school, we're out in the driveway of my grandparents' house, and we're watching as the clouds are swirling over us. They hadn't come down yet, but they were swirling over us, and we're just like, wow, look at that. Just like a crazy Oklahoman would do, right? And about 2 miles later, what happens? It touches down in Lake Hefner and hits right in the middle of the lake. Storms are powerful. Storms are one of those things that oftentimes are to be feared. But also storms are those things that we look at and we think, what a great God that we have that not only has the power to curtail storms, create storms, but power over the storms and all things. And so we see all these different storms and it's awe-inspiring to think about them. As a matter of fact, we were in Louisville, Kentucky, going to school, and some straight-line winds came through, maybe 50, 60 miles an hour, straight-line winds, and they're not used to it out there to have that kind of wind. And I remember the next day, everybody's just in shock, you know, of all these winds that came through. I can't believe we have 50-mile-an-hour winds. And I go, man, that's nothing. We have 100-mile-an-hour winds in Oklahoma. But it's amazing the devastation that type of a wind caused in a different part of the country. I went out to a national forest area that I would ride my mountain bike in, and there was a tree that had been uprooted because of these storms whose root system was about as big as this stage, just toppled over because they weren't prepared for that kind of storm. I think it's important to be prepared for storms. It's important to make sure that we're aware that they're coming, aware that we have the things that we need, aware of the best place to hide ourselves when the really bad storms come. Because storms come, not just physically, but those storms come emotionally. They come spiritually. They come through our family situations and all kinds of different things. Storms happen all the time. You know, when we think about storms, it's storms of life, storms of emotion. It's not a lot of fun. This isn't a new thing. Storms have been happening in lives since the beginning of time. Think about Adam and Eve for a moment. Well, Adam and Eve, they experienced a storm, didn't they? They had paradise. They blew it. And then they were kicked out of paradise. You think that was a storm? Well, I bet that they were a little bit frustrated at that point. I bet that they were scared, unaware of what's going on. I bet they were somewhat fearful. You think about Noah. Not only the physical storm that he went through enduring the 40 days, but think about the storm that he went through as people were mocking him. You're building a boat? It hadn't rained for however long. You're building a boat? What's wrong with you, man? And mocking him about him believing God and they're living the life that they live. There's definitely a storm. Think about the storm of Joshua and Caleb. The storm that they had to endure that they didn't create. Think about that for a minute. They wanted to be faithful. They wanted to follow God. And they said, let's go. Listen, y'all, God's prepared the way. Let's go. Let's follow Him. Let's do what He said. And what happened? They were outnumbered. They were outvoted. And because of that, they had to wander in a storm 40 years in a wilderness. Sometimes we endure storms that we don't create. Sometimes we have to deal with those types of storms. Joshua and Caleb, they dealt with that kind of storm. But think about Paul. You think Paul, Apostle Paul, he dealt with some storms. Well, he was beaten several times. He was thrown into prison several times. Matter of fact, one of those prisons I was able to see, that prison was literally a hole in the ground. If you were to look, there was a hole in the ground. They would drop that man down on the ground. And there was a little bitty door inside that prison on the back side of the wall. As soon as that door opened, you know what that meant? Execution time. Trial and execution. But they knew that the trial was going to end in execution. You think that was a storm for that man? To go through the beatings that he did, to go through the mockery, to go through the betrayal of so many of those people that were his Jewish brethren that said, "You're crazy. Jesus is not the Messiah. You think he dealt with some storms?" Well, I guarantee he did. See, storms aren't just things that we see outside. Storms aren't just things that we experience when the rain comes down and the winds begin to blow. Sometimes storms happen when we live life through our emotions, through our family life, through all kinds of situations. We could go on and on of people in the Bible that dealt with storms. Moses, Peter, Job, John. I think you could list every person in the Bible. And at some point, some degree, some way or another, they dealt with a storm. They had dealt with a hard time in their life. They dealt with difficulty in life that would have made them think, "I'm ready to turn it in." But they didn't turn it in. They didn't check in. They didn't quit. Have you ever thought about that at any point in your life? Have you ever thought about that? About those heroes? We could flip over to Hebrews and look at the Hall of Faith. Those men, those women, they very easily could have checked in and said, "Forget it. I'm done. I can't do it anymore." But they didn't do that. They didn't forget it. They didn't walk away. They pursued Jesus. They pursued their faith in God. And they said, "The storm's coming. The storm's here. But I got something to hold me through the storm." And that's what I want you all to see tonight. That even though we have all kinds of storms going on, there is help in the midst of the storms. We mentioned all kinds of different people in the Bible that dealt with storms. There was another guy who dealt with a lot of storms. His name was David. Matter of fact, he was king of the nation. He was a man who did a lot of things. Matter of fact, he created some of his own storms. Remember that? Up on the tower, looking down at Bathsheba. Then what does he do? He kills a man, or has a man killed, basically sent him to the front lines. Loses a child. Baby dies. He created that storm. But there's other storms he didn't create. Other storms that he had to deal with in life. He didn't ask to be king. Matter of fact, he was in the field, minding his own business, doing his own thing, shepherding those sheep, fighting off bears, fighting off lions. And then God said, "You're the one. You're the one." Now, that wasn't a storm. Okay, but through that, there's a lot of storms come. See, here's something that's so important that I think we need to remember, that when we are seeking to be faithful to God and seeking to obey God, guess who steps in? Satan does. The adversary, the one that does not want us to succeed, steps in. He steps in to try to stop us and tries to step in and discourage us, tries to step in and cause us to quit the race, to quit the battle, to quit all the things. And he did that in David's life more than once. David experienced all kinds of storms. He experienced a storm of fear when he faced a giant, a little boy walking out on a battlefield, a man that was over 7 foot tall, 8 foot tall, however tall Goliath was. What did David do? He faced that storm head on. He said, "I trust God more than I fear the storm." But then there was the storm of a man that, you know, he really thought, "I can trust this guy. Matter of fact, I'm best friends with his son. I believe this man's got my best interest at heart. He's tried to help me here and there. He's given me his own armor to face this giant at times. He's done other things that maybe changed direction whenever David started having success." David faced a storm. What did he face? The king trying to kill him. Trying to pin him against the wall with a spear. "Oh, you think that you're going to be all right. You think that you're going to be king. You think that you're better than me. I'll show you who's king." You think that was a storm? I guarantee it. Can you imagine the emotions running through David's heart and mind at that point? The fear, the dismay, all of the things and the hurt and the pain of betrayal and anything else that would have come into mind. Do you think that he was in the middle of a storm? Yeah, he was in the middle of a storm. But when we think about David, when we consider what David had done and how David lived his life, after all of these storms that he faced, you know what David was known for? A man after God's own heart. David faced the storms. You could say he was successful through the storms, but I will say this. It wasn't him that was successful through the storm. It was God through him, empowering him, enabling him, staying with him, and all of those things. But David stayed faithful. David stayed faithful through all of the storms in order to be recognized as man after God's own heart. So how can we face the storms of life And they will come. If you hadn't faced them yet, they're on their way. But I'm pretty sure, knowing who I'm looking at and seeing the people who have lived life already, you've seen storms. You've been there. How do we face the storms and survive, not just survive, but remain successful? How do we face the storms to the point where we walk out of the storm with the fragrance of Christ upon us? Let me share this with you. God sends storms into our life sometimes. Yeah, He sends the storms sometimes to help us become more like Him. Sometimes they come from attacks of the enemy. And when that happens, God doesn't leave you alone. But when He takes you through them, He's trying to help you get better and become more like Him. And so when we face those storms, our goal ought to be, I want to walk out of this, people see Jesus. That's what we ought to think when we walk into storms, even though that's a hard thing to think about. If you'll look with me in Psalm chapter 27, we see David, after experiencing all kinds of things and walking through the storm and experiencing some horrific things, David, who wrote many, many of the Psalms, this is what he says beginning in verse 1. The Lord is my light, my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Whom shall I be afraid? When evildoers assail me to eat up my flesh, my adversaries and my foes, it is they who stumble and fall. Though an army encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war arise against me, yet I will be confident. Look at verse 4 with me. One thing I have asked of the Lord. One thing I have asked of the Lord that I will seek after. That I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in His temple. One thing. I want to look at one verse, verse 4 there. One thing that I have done. When we think about dealing with storms, I think there's five things that we can focus on in the storm. Five things that will help us face the storm and move through the storm in order to be able to be seen as knowing and following Christ. The first thing that I see out of that verse is this: be single-minded. Be single-minded. As I've said, and as you know, and as you've experienced, storms come. If they're not coming, if they're not happening right now, they're coming. They're on their way. It'll happen. It's a matter of fact. It's a fact of life. But when we think that, when we know that and understand that, we must be single-minded in all things. What does David say? One thing I've asked. One thing. I've got one thing on my mind. One thing alone that I want from God. That I would be able to pursue Him and what? Know Him. The one thing I want, even in the midst of the storm, is to know that God's there. To know that God is with me. To know that I'm not alone. I want to know God. When all the things around me are waging, when the pain in life is at its worst, I want to know that I'm not alone. I want to know that God is right there in my midst, carrying me, helping me, walking me through all of these things. David cared about one thing and one thing only, and that's to know God. That's to know God. There's no greater thing in this life than to know God. Yeah, we have all kinds of wonderful experiences. We get to have family relationships and friendships. We get to have great jobs sometimes. Sometimes they're not so great. We get to have all kinds of wonderful things that we experience, from vacations to being able to just spend time with friends or family on a weekend. We have all kinds of wonderful things, but there's one thing that David says is more important and much better than all of them. That's Jesus. That's knowing Him and having that walk with Him and having that relationship with Him. Being able to experience life in such a way that He knows Him. You know why that's so important? Jesus answers that question in John 17:3. This is eternal life, that they might know You, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom You've sent. That's life. Y'all, we can seek for life in all kinds of different ways, all kinds of different places. But there's only one place, one person that we will ever find life. That's Jesus Christ. He is life. Not just that He gives life. He is life, according to John 17:3. Therefore, we must understand that there's one thing above everything else in this world. Now, we live our lives, and we have to live our lives here. We can't quit our lives. We can't go and move on a monastery and just be a monk and remove ourselves from society. No, we've got to live in a midst. the world around us. We have to live among people. We need to, because the world needs Jesus. But first and foremost, all of the good things in life, there's one thing that trumps them all, and that's knowing God. And David knew that. David went through his storms, and when he came out on the other side, his conclusion was nothing else will satisfy. He had Saul hunting him down, and he said, I just want to know God. I can deal with Saul as long as I know God. I can deal with somebody trying to kill me as long as I know that I'm not alone. As long as I know that God is there with me, I can deal with all of that. As long as I know God. And so God is alone. He's the one that satisfies. Nothing else is worth living for but God. He is powerful enough. Listen, He's powerful enough to sustain you. He's powerful enough to satisfy every want, every whim, every desire, if you will seek one thing, to know God. You see, David was focused on the right object. When he prayed and he said, one thing have I asked of the Lord. One thing have I asked of the Lord. Here's something we need to understand. You can go and ask all kinds of people all kinds of things, but they can't supply everything that you ask them. They might be able to help you with little pieces, bits and pieces here and there of life. They might be able to supply some little things here and there of life, but they can't give you what you really need. David knows that. He's probably lived enough life to know that, to the point where he says, I'm going to ask the Lord. Now, when we see the Lord here, we're talking about Yahweh, the King of Kings, the God who created all things. He says, I'm asking Him. I'm not going to just anybody. Sometimes, as a side note here, I think sometimes when we have issues, problems, things that we need to know about, we run to a lot of people before we run to God. I think we do. We run to our friends. We run to our parents. We run to our pastors, which is not a problem. But the issue that we need to think about is who's got the answers of every situation of all of life? The Lord does. And if you go to somebody for help, to ask them help, which is good and right, and they try to steer you in a direction that's not God, well, you better turn and run. They try to give you some advice that may not echo what the Bible has to say, you better turn and run. This morning we talked about the idea of do not love the world or the things of the world, because the reality of things is today's world and the values of the world today are in opposition to God. And if we try to run to somebody and they say something out of emotion or feeling or out of their earthly wisdom that sounds more like the world than it does God, then you better run. David says, one thing I ask of God. One thing I ask of the Lord, because I know He's the only one that can supply all my needs. I'm going to the one that can give me what I need. He was focused on the right object. Even through pain, he was focused on the right object. Charles Spurgeon, he said this, under David's painful circumstances, we might have expected him to desire repose, safety, a thousand other good things, but no. He has set his heart on the pearl. I love that. David set his heart on the pearl and he leaves all the rest. David says, God, I want you. God, I want you. Listen, I'm not going to stand up here and say that I have been somebody that's been absolutely perfect and only wanting God all of the time. I'm not. But this is something that we all need to encourage one another in. We must all ask one another periodically, often actually, we ought often ask one another, are you seeking God? What's God been working in your life lately? Oh, I know you're going through a hard time. Have you asked one thing of the Lord that you might know Him? We ought to do that. We ought to daily be in people's business to say, are you seeking Him? Are you pursuing Him? Are you loving Him? Guys, that's why we have the church. We've got the church in order to push each other closer to the Father, to help one another, to pursue the Father more. And so even through pain, that's where David was at. Don't put God on the shelf. Don't put God on the shelf. You know what I found? And this is not a knock on anybody. I think it's just the way it is. What I found is that a lot of times when people come to church, they bring this right here with them, which they ought to. We always tell our boys, hey, where's your Bible? You bring it to church? Yeah, I forgot it. I'll go get it. Or, yeah, I've already got it. It's right here. But a lot of times people bring this to church well and good, and they ought to. But you know what they do the rest of the week? Throw it in the back of the car. Put it on the shelf. Listen, don't put God on a shelf. Don't put God on the shelf. He deserves much more than that. He paid too much for that. Don't go to God like he's a spiritual genie or a Santa Claus. Just when you need him, I'm going to go to him. No. David didn't go to him just in the storm. David's normal life and practice was, I'm living for God. I'm pursuing God. My life is in God. And we'll see that in just a minute. Make your daily practice following God. And then when the storms come, you go to God. And when the good times come, you go to God. And when you're at work and something pops up, you go to God. It's all about going back to God in all things. Don't put God on the shelf. It's easy to try to go it alone. Sometimes it's easy to withdraw. It really is. Sometimes the pain comes in life, and what do? We just kind of shrink back. I'm guilty of this. I'm just not going to say anything. I'm going to be quiet. Just leave me alone. Leave me alone. Maybe you're like me. When difficult times come or something happens to where your feelings are hurt or you're depressed or whatever it may be, you just kind of shrink into yourself and you don't do anything or say anything. Just leave me alone. No. Don't do that. Go to God. It's easier still to let the first thing that goes when the storms come is your time with God. Isn't that easy? That when difficulties come and pain comes and strife comes and we get depressed or angry or frustrated, you think, just turn the TV on so I can forget about life for a little bit. That hit a heart chord right here. All right, maybe it did with you as well. We escape listening to God or escape the storms of life sometimes in poor ways. Sometimes we do it by, I don't know, you've got your own means of escaping the storm. Maybe it's TV, maybe it's movies, maybe it's getting out on the lake and just ignoring people, whatever it may be. We've got our ways. We can't do that. It's easy to do that. We can't do that. Have you noticed that when you miss a day with God, it turns into 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, a week, 2 weeks, month? Next thing you know, you wake up and you think, man, life is just not going right now. What in the world's going on? And you think, oh yeah, there's a little dust in my Bible. I better pull that back out and get back in it. You ever notice how, I'm not saying things are easy when you're in the Bible every day, because they're not, because that's when the enemy will attack you, but things are peaceful. There's a calm in the midst of the storm when we are faithful to pursue God. It's almost like we get an injection of energy sometimes. Now, I'm not saying there's not desert moments, because there are. But even the people that are in the hall of faith have desert moments, and they continued and pursued God even when they didn't feel Him. You hear that, y'all? You ought to pursue God even when you don't feel His presence. His presence hasn't left you. It's not the problem with God's presence. It's the problem with our emotions. It's a problem with sometimes how we feel. God did never leave us. And so we've got to be careful. We can't put God on a shelf when it comes to that. You must not put God on the shelf any time in your life, but especially in storms. Especially in the storms. Especially in the storms. The first place we ought to go when it starts to rage around us is, God, I need you. God, I need you right now. Please give me the peace. Give me the help. Give me the power in all things to follow through and be faithful to you. Give me a presence. And that's one of those prayers that I pray for people a lot when they come and they say, I don't know what's going on. I need help. You know what? I typically pray, God, allow your presence to fall down upon them so that they can feel you all around them. Because that's what people need. They need to know God's with them. That God hasn't left them. It is in the storms that you need Him the absolute most. You know, there's a poem that was written years ago, and I know y'all have heard this before. But the poem goes like this. It says, one night I had a dream. As I was walking along the beach with my Lord across the dark sky, flashed scenes of my life. For each scene, I noticed two sets of footprints in the sand, one belonging to me and one to my Lord. After the last scene of my life, flashed before me. I looked back at the footprints in the sand. I noticed that many times along the path of my life, especially at the very lowest and saddest times, there was only one set of footprints. This really troubled me. And so I asked the Lord about it. Lord, you said once I decided to follow you, you'd walk with me all the way. But I noticed that during the saddest and most troublesome times of my life, there was only one set of footprints. I don't understand why. When I needed you most, you would leave me. He whispered, my precious child, I love you and I'll never leave you. Never, ever during your trials and your testing, when you saw only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. Isn't it great to know that God carries us, even through the storms, the most difficult pains? Well, that's only one thing that we can do, is be one-minded and have a focus, a single-minded focus on God. And that's one thing that's hard, because Satan will do everything that he can to put things and distractions in your life to say, oh, look over here. Oh, look over here. We've got to have a single focus upon God alone. Second thing is this. Be determined for resolute action. One thing I have asked of the Lord that I will seek, that I will seek after. We must have a resolute action and be determined. Put yourself in the pathway to hear from the Lord. Put yourself in the means by which that He talks. And that, number one, first and foremost, is right here. Put yourself in the pathway of hearing from God by listening to Him through His Word. Spurgeon, again, he said, we shall find our desires to be like clouds without rain unless followed up by practical endeavors. Right? You can say you believe all day long till you're blue in the face, but until you put action to your quote unquote faith, it doesn't mean anything. It's clouds without rain. We don't want to be clouds without rain. We want to be full of rain. We want to storm down on the world because we've been filled with God, because we have put our faith into action. Read the book of James, as a matter of fact. A guy named Andrew McLaren, he said this, a great many people say, one thing I have desired, and fall into persistent continuousness of the desire. So they say, I desire, but they don't do anything about it. We must have resolute action. Think about the persistent widow, if you will. Okay, in Luke chapter 18, the persistent widow, what'd she do? She sought and she looked and she pursued and she didn't give up until she found. That's the idea of seeking here. The idea of seeking is somebody that will have such an intense focus that they won't quit, they won't relent, they won't stop until they find what they're looking for. Basically, this idea, this word is something of losing something and looking and looking and looking until you find it. David says, God, I'm going to seek you like that. Dare I ask the question, do y'all seek God with that kind of intensity? I can't say that I'm 100% on that page, but I want to be. And I hope you do too. Which comes back to what I said, that we as a church ought to be saying, what's God telling you? Have you been with God? Have you read the Word? Are you praying today? That will help our intensity ramp up to the point where we will follow. We will pursue. The third thing that we can do to keep our focus is to keep an intimate longing. An intimate longing. Look back at verse 4. One thing I've asked of the Lord, and I will seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all of the days of my life. That I might dwell. David basically says, Lord, I want to be with you more than anything else or anyone else. Lord, you're it. There's no one else. I want you. You know, Jesus echoes something like that. I don't have it written down here, so I can't remember exactly where it's at. But Jesus basically says, unless you hate your mother and your father, your brother and your sister, unless you hate even your own life, you cannot be my disciple. Now, did Jesus really mean that we're supposed to hate our parents, teenagers? The answer is no. No. He's throwing out an extreme statement to get a point across. You know what Jesus is saying there? He's saying the same thing David is basically. He's saying, love me more. Love me with such an intensity, with such a fervor, with such a desire, that your love for me makes every other love in your life look like hatred. That's what Jesus said. And so David, what's David say? David says, oh Lord, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord. You know what that dwell means? It means live in. It means put down stakes and stay. To linger. To not move on, but to stay right there. As a matter of fact, when we look at our New Testament word abide, that word abide means to build a house, to pitch a tent, and to live in that thing. This is kind of the idea here with dwelling. I'm going to live here. God, I want to live with you. I want to live in your presence. I want to live where you're at. Wherever you're at, God, I want to be there. I want you above all things. I don't care. I don't care about anything else as much as I care about living and being with you. God, I want you. That's what David says. He has an intimate longing to know the Father, to follow the Father, to be in the Father's presence. The fourth thing that we see is that we need to have a heart for worship. Not only to be with God and live with God, but even to worship God. Look, he says later in verse 4, he says that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all of my days to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord. God, I want to be with you. I want to live with you. I want to dwell with you so that I can worship you. God, I've seen how incredible you are. I've seen how beautiful you are. I've looked how you have been patient in my life. I've looked at how you have forgiven me in all of my sins. I've looked at how you've blessed me beyond anything else that this world can give me. And God, I want to tell you how great you are. I want to worship you beyond anything else. God, I want to set my gaze upon you. You know what the word gaze means? That word gaze literally means to look at him with an intensity and not to take his eyes off of him. To set his gaze upon him. It doesn't mean that he says, oh, I just want to, let me just take a look. Let me take a peek. Okay, that's good. I'm good. I'm fine. No, you know what he says? God, I want to see you. And I don't want to move my eyes because I know there's nothing else that can satisfy. I want my gaze. I want my eyes to be settled so much upon who God is and what He's done for me and the beauty and the majesty and the grandeur and the glory. I want to worship you, God. I want to tell you how great you are. Did you know you can worship in the storm? Did you know that? Did you know that when the storm is raging, you can say, God, I praise you. I can praise you, God, because I know you're in control of this storm. I know that you're above the storm. I know that you can stop this storm, but you want to use it in my life to make me like you. God, I praise you. Did you know you can do that? That's not legal. Matter of fact, it's encouraged. That's what David did. That's what David did. He said, God, I want to worship you. I want to worship you in the storm so that when other people see me in the storm, they look at me and they say, what's wrong with David? And I can answer and say, I've got my eyes fixed upon the King. And I don't care what happens to me because I know He's got me. That's what David does. You can worship in the storm, y'all, and we ought to. It's not easy. It goes back to that old phrase. I think I might have shared it with you before. Sometimes we need to quit listening to ourselves and start talking to ourselves. Isn't that a good phrase? I heard that one time and I thought, I got to write that down. I didn't have to write it down. I remembered it right off the bat. Sometimes we need to quit listening to ourselves and start talking to ourselves. So when you start going through a storm and you don't have your eyes on Christ, you ought to say, eyes, come on, look up. When you're not worshiping in the storm, you ought to say, self, I don't care how you feel. You tell God how great He is. You tell God what kind of a great God He is. What kind of a benevolent God He is. What kind of a loving God He is. What kind of a forgiving God He is. You focus on what He's done for you. And I tell you what, whenever you focus on worshiping God in the midst of the storm, it kind of lessens the storm a little bit. Or at least, maybe if it doesn't lessen the storm, at least distracts you from the storm. And you can say, at least I know He's there. At least I know He's carrying me through. And so we must have a heart of worship in the storm. So set your gaze upon God. Fifth point, Fifth point is this. Think deeply upon and learn from Christ. Think deeply upon and learn from Christ. David says, not only am I going to worship God, but I don't want to just gaze upon the beauty of the Lord, but I want to inquire in His temple. I want to inquire of You. Lord, I want to meditate upon Your goodness. I want to meditate upon who You are. You've shown me so many things, but I believe that You'll show me so much more. I want to think about that. I want to meditate upon You. I want to think upon You. You know how you meditate on God? He's given us a great way to do that. Listen, we've got a really confused world out there. When they hear the word meditate, you know what they think? They think, empty your mind. Don't think of anything. Just try to have an empty existence. And then all of a sudden you'll be enlightened. As I've heard Johnny Hunt say before, there's a Greek word for that. Hogwash. That's not meditation, y'all. That's not what when we talk about meditation in the Bible, that's not meditation. You know what meditation is? It means filling your mind with the Word of God, not emptying your mind of things. It means filling it with who God is and what He has done and thinking upon the goodness and the greatness and the glory of God. It means to fill your mind with His Word so that He will speak to you. You want to have peace in the midst of the storm? You set your eyes upon His Word. You meditate upon His Word. You think about who He is and what He said. Matter of fact, I went through a terrible storm in my life. When I was a senior in high school, I told you this. My brother died in a car wreck, unexpectedly, tragically, gone. You know what my youth pastor told me? He was the one guy that held me up and tried to do all that he could to point me to Jesus. Again, there's that church at work. He said, Drew, he said, you open up the Psalms and you start reading the Psalms every day. He said, you start meditating upon the goodness of God by reading through the Psalms every day. He said, Drew, I know you're hurting. I know you're going through a horrible, painful circumstance that I don't understand, but God knows. You start reading the Psalms. That's what he told me. You know what I did? I opened up the book of Psalms and I began to read every single day through the Psalms. God carried me through. Remember that movie Twister? Back in the 90s? Movie about tornadoes? Helen Hunt and... good grief, what's his name? I don't know. I can't remember. Yeah, Bill, that's right. Whatever his name was. You remember that they were hunting down tornadoes and they're looking for these tornadoes just like a good Okie would do? And then at the end of the movie, what happens? Well, a tornado finds them, doesn't it? Storm starts raging upon them. And they tie themselves on this metal piping that's going into the ground, which, come on now, they ain't going to survive that. Are you kidding me? But somehow they survive this F5 tornado that's coming through and ripping everything else to shreds. But somehow they survive. You know what happens? The eye of the tornado passes over them. And everything is calm. Now they look around them. What do they see? They see devastation. They see this storm ravaging everything around them. And they look up and they see blue skies. They see the calm in the storm. I'm here to tell you that that's not going to happen in a real storm, in a real F5 tornado. That's not going to happen. But I will tell you this, that within an F5 spiritual, emotional, life tornado, there is that kind of calm. And His name is Jesus Christ. And the only way that you can have it is if you look to what David has done and say, there's one thing, and He's it. Would you all bow with me in prayer?